are live and on lockdown.
Are you ready? Ready.
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland and across the globe.
Listen here.
You're listening to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast. The host, Fraser Ramsey.
Hey, this is Afia Leatham, creator of the Frame Your Day app, helping you walk out every day in victory. I'm proud to be a sponsor of Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders.
Hi, this is Zakiya Ringgold from NaturalSoapByZakiya.com, proud sponsors of the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast.
Welcome to another edition to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast. Certainly racking them up so far this year. And we have a guest all the way from Phoenix, Arizona today. And we're sort of discussing the client, guest. Yes, so my client. We could be my client. There we go. It's starting already. So my guest, we're going to talk about the struggles of, which is a common thing. Well, maybe not common or maybe not as common as people who are born with a cleft lip and obviously the operations they have to go through. And the general struggles that my guest has been through in life. And he's also an author to recently. We're talking that he got married later in life in his late mid-40s. We're going to talk about that. We're going to build up this sort of story, and we're going to talk about just what he's been through and how he, by through this interview, he wants to help others and hopefully impact somebody else's life. And that's why we're having this chat. So I want to welcome Mike Buchanan, my guest and not my client. Welcome to the Ramsey Unleashed Going Beyond Borders podcast. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Fraser. I appreciate the opportunity. Think of me this way. Just think of me as your long-lost Scottish cousin. I'm Scottish somewhere back in the bloodline. So
I think everyone and their dog's probably somehow Scottish, Irish, take your pick.
Hey, there's a lot worse things we can be.
Even Aaron Mark Smith's dog's got some Scottish in him. And if he's listening to this, he'll be laughing.
I'm hoping he's listening. It's his fault that you and I are connected. I mean, not his fault, but to his credit that you and I are connected.
Exactly. So he'll be laughing at that. Yeah, we always have a laugh. It's always good. But let's dive in, as I usually do. Let's build up the story. Let's build up your life. Because at the end of the day, you've written a book now, but we want to find out. Before I actually dive in, let's just talk about let's talk about your book. You wrote a book, and when did you write it? When did it get published? Give us a quick summary of what it's about.
Sure. So I wrote a book called Feeling Down, Look Up. And okay. The basic summary is, we all have those times where we're going through life, and as Christians or non-Christians, it is written from a Christian standpoint. I do want to point that out. But even from a non-Christian standpoint, our eyes turn from where they should be.
Okay.
And the book is just aimed to direct people back to where the vision should be.
Oh, yeah.
That's a quick executive summary, if you will. There's 32 devotions, and there are 32 photos that not only myself or my wife, but my daughter and even my grandson and a longtime friend of ours have contributed photos to it.
So there we go. That's a synopsis. We're going to come to that as we go. So let's dissect into the start of your life. What's what we'll do. We have a sort of shout out to somebody who's watching all the way from Yorkshire. My friend Mick Beavers, who's watching and will be listening. If you are listening to us, we are streaming live via Facebook. We're doing Street LinkedIn and YouTube, but also will be in the audio version for the podcast. So a big shout out to Mick Beavers. I've known him pretty well. Mick's Taxi, so if you're in the area, you can in your taxi. I'm not sure he's still doing that, but we'll find out. Anyway, by the by, let's get back to the interview and my client. So excuse me as I cough.
No worries.
But yeah, so anyway, let's as I say, go back to... Let's just dissect your life, the first 20 years of your life. So you obviously you're born. Let's talk about the cleft lip. Sorry, you're born being born with a cleft lip. And going through the process of the struggles with that and
cleft lip and palate. As well with the cleft lip and palate, my dad was in the military, so we had military surgeons try and do it. They took, I want to say 15, 20 shots or so. I don't have my military records anymore, but they They did what they could. We were bouncing around from military bases because in the late 60s and early 70s, tours of duty were a little bit shorter, apparently, than what they are now. Throwing the fact that his dad died in 1970, so he came home from Germany in the middle of it all. But in about 1972 or 73, he was stationed in Fort Benning, Georgia. And we found some civilian doctors in Atlanta, Georgia. And they started doing and redoing some work. Eventually, we would end up in Salt Lake City after Dad retired. Here's one for you, Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
You had the pleasure. You're trying to work with my rate of speech, and I'm trying to get used to your rate of interview. But imagine me not saying anything for 2 weeks. In 2 weeks in 1976, my lips were sewed shut to try and help the process. We finished the surgeries for the most part in 1984. My senior in high school, everybody else was having fun. I was having two surgeries in high school. So that's the kind of the medical side of the cleft lip and palate.
So if your lips were, your whole mouth was closed.
Yes, sir.
So how did you eat? Did you get a feeding tube?
No feeding tubes. But what they did was my mom would use syringes. There were just two tiny holes
right
on the corners of my mouth. And we would do a lot of milkshakes.
I love milkshakes.
And finally, at the very end, she would do toast. And we would crumple these. I can't even make my fingers small enough to try and indicate how small the pieces were. We would cram them in. And I had just enough room to chew and then swallow the toast. And that was the first food I had in 2 weeks.
My goodness. So when did you... So did you be obviously getting them unstitched? Or
yes, sir. Yeah.
How was the healing process? What was it looking like?
Well, it brought us to almost where we are now. Through it all, what it was doing for me was it was forcing me to deal with from people not in my family. Right. It was forcing me to deal with a lot of being called names, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have a choice. You can either listen to the name calls, and I'll be honest with you, I did, right? We're all human. We hear it. We deal with it. And you deal with bullying. But what I did, Fraser, was I applied myself to books and to learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I was a pretty decent student in school because for a long time, I didn't have a lot of friends.
Oh, yeah.
And then my dad died in 77 when I was 11. And my brother is 8 years older than I was, so he had already joined the military.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up thinking for about 10 years that I didn't have any emotions.
Mm-hmm.
What I found out after those 10 years are over is it's not that Mike didn't have any emotions, Fraser. It's just that all the emotions I had were bad.
Right.
I had anger, I had hatred, I had bitterness, I had, you name it, I had bad. It's just that as smart as I was supposedly, I had convinced myself I didn't have any. And so in the fall of 79, my brother led my mom, my sister, and me to the Lord. We became Christians.
Okay. How old were you in 79?
13. I was 13 years old.
So when did you start secondary school?
You mean high school?
High school, yeah.
About the same time. Yeah. We went to a Christian school. I finished my last 5 years for the first time. It was the first time I went to a school of any sort for more than 2 years in a row was when we went to this Christian school.
Right.
And it was run by a church. Very smallest church, very small Christian school. I think the most kids we ever had there, K through 12. So for all 13 grades, or I think the most we ever had there was like 45, 50 kids tops. And I went from the first year being, quote, the most Christ-like student to 2 years later, our student council was all going to be thrown out for all doing marijuana at the same time. So I became the de facto student council president. And, you know, I was reading comics a lot back then. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So basically, the school you're at, so the is a Christian school, right?
Yes.
So half the students are getting high on weed, basically.
The elder students are, yeah, except for one person that's older than, well, two people, I think, that are older than I am. They're all having fun away from school, and they got caught.
Okay, so I'm guessing I'm obviously... yeah, I suppose you can go to a school. I suppose they're just enjoying the life. Yeah.
Well, there are supposed to be safeguards to prevent that from happening.
Anyway, and, you became the kind of
yeah, and after my tenure as president of the student council, that student council went away for somewhere between 6 and 8 years because. Oh, yeah. The school was so small, and what we'll talk about here in a few minutes, there just wasn't a need for it. But, you know, I was reading comics a lot back then, and if I had been Spider-Man, my spider sense would have been screaming at me, run, run, run! Because in my senior year of high school, Fraser, was one of those moments that marks you for life.
Okay.
And not just me, but marked a lot of people. So figure there's 30 people in the Christian school at this time. There's maybe 120 people in the church. Right. Maybe. It's my senior in high school. Like I said, I'm in the middle of two separate surgeries on my face.
Oh, yeah.
My mom's a single mom trying to raise me and my sister. My brother is in town. We're in Fort Carson, Colorado, just as kind of a reference point. Or Colorado Springs, Colorado. My brother's working at Fort Carson. And we're all living together because he's only, what was he? He was in his early 20s. So sometimes he would live with us, sometimes he'd live on the base. But,
Where was your dad at this time?
My dad had been dead for 13 years. My mom never, or not 13 years, for 7 years. My mom never remarried.
Right. So what did your dad pass off?
Cancer.
Cancer. Okay.
He was one of three cancer deaths that I experienced in my family in 5 years between the ages of 7 and 11.
Right. Got you. Sorry.
Yep. And so my senior in high school, we're all in church one night and the pastor gets up and he says, "We've had to let our vice principal go because he got a 14-year-old student pregnant."
How old was the vice principal?
He was late 30s, early 40s.
Okay.
And if you've never felt 120 people, at least emotionally and spiritually, shake an auditorium, I did, because nobody knew what was going to happen.
Right.
And I was struggling. You know, we were just talking about how devoted I had been to my studies, but there were two classes that year that I had problems with. One was Spanish and one was chemistry. And there's nobody on site that could help me with them. And so we had a plan that I'd go to a school 2 hours north in Fort Collins, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And they're going to help me finish my degree. It had been in the works for a month. I turned 18. I was at the funeral, I should say. was at the funeral of a friend's 4-year-old daughter who had also died of cancer the Saturday of my 18th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday night, I'm supposed to leave Monday morning to go to Fort Collins, and my principal, who's also the pastor, pulls me aside and he says, Mike, he says, you need to know two things if you go to Fort Collins. He says, one, we won't graduate you because you didn't finish here. And two, the school in Fort Collins won't graduate you because you're only taking 2 classes. What would you like to do?
So the Christian school were refusing to graduate you because you'd left and gone somewhere else.
If I was leaving, they would not graduate. And if I showed up at the other place, they were not going to graduate me because I was coming in and only doing 2 classes.
Crikey, so you're a bit of a rock and a hard place, really.
Yeah. They needed somebody to stay and keep everything together.
So so basically, with all the was going down regarding that big news, I mean, on a question, looking at a scale of probably 1 to 10, maybe, even though it's technically a Christian school, but how Christian was it, as in practice purposes within the actual?
We had a lot of people in that church and in that school that loved the Lord.
Right.
But the headship was jacked.
Right. So it was just.
I believe that's in the 3 Thessalonians chapter 7.
Right.
Headship is jacked. If you study the Hebrew.
Christian school by name, but not really by nature, in a sense.
Like I said, we wanted to help this young lady. We couldn't. They wouldn't. You know, we weren't allowed contact for different rules back then, and it was a mess. Like I said, I was the vice principal by default. They came to me and said, Mike, we want you to be vice principal. You won't be able to do anything with your sister's stuff, and obviously you won't be able to do anything with your stuff, but the only person you'll answer to is the principal.
Okay.
You'll have run of the school. But here's what was happening to Mike at that point, Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
I was turning so hard at that point. I was turning so, you know, we talked about a minute ago about all those dark emotions I had. We had a scenario for this younger student. He was about, let's see, I was 17, almost 18, so he would have been about 12 or 13. And he was disrespecting one of the teachers one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in as vice principal and maybe to try and, you know, be the older student. And I got maybe a little too close to him for what he liked. And he took a swing at me, Fraser. Now, mm-hmm. in that school, you didn't play fight. You didn't talk about fighting. The first rule about Fight Club in that school is there was no Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
But in a half a second, I know you and I talked about it beforehand. I saw yours and Mark Smith's excellent interview. If you haven't seen it, by the way, free plug, go watch his and Mark Smith's interview. But in a move that would have made any professional wrestler proud, I put this kid in a hammerlock. And when I did, one of our teachers dropped like she'd been hit by a right hook. She was just like, I thought she was going to faint. So I had to drop that kid's arm and make sure that this teacher wasn't going to pass slap out. But that's how bad it was. Fast forward a few months, and this principal, this pastor, this man of God, me and my best friend are in there for my graduation. I'm the only kid. I tell people, you'll enjoy this, Fraser. I might have told you before, today even. I graduated first in my class.
That's good. Well done.
I graduated last in my class.
First and last?
I was my graduating class.
Right.
That's how small the Christian school was, brother.
Crikey.
We didn't have another graduating class from that school for 6 years.
My goodness. Okay.
But anyway, on my graduating night, with all the crap that I was putting my mom through,
mm-hmm.
and everybody knew it. Everybody knew it. this pastor gets up and has a word from the Lord. And my best friend sitting, it's my best friend, his mom, my mom, and me. And we're heads bowed, eyes closed. And this pastor gets up and he says, "I have a word from the Lord for you, Mike." And he goes, "I know that you have obeyed your mother." And me and my best friend, both eyes up, turned and looked at each other across our moms. And then we turned back to the stage going, "He's about to be struck dead by lightning. Because I ain't been obeying my mom at all for the last several months." And that was my jumping off point into saying, if this is Christianity and this is all the fun they can have, it's my turn.
So basically, let's talk about the kind of, well, your, let's just call it falling off the wagon, I suppose, if you want to call it that.
It's not a bad word.
Yeah, falling off the wagon in that sense. So talk about the dark period that you went through that we briefly discussed before we went live.
Sure.
So let's talk about that.
Not a problem. I did a little bit of drinking. I didn't drink much because I learned that when I was drinking, I was stupid. I didn't hurt anybody except for myself. Maybe the emotions of my mom who didn't want me to drink at all. But I didn't do a lot of drinking. It's just I made a couple of stupid decisions. For instance, me and a friend might take the empty beer bottles or empty wine cooler bottles out to a local basketball court. And instead of trying to throw them in the basketball hoop, there'd be a trash can 40 or 50 feet. You know, we'd be at one end of the basketball court on the picnic table. Trash cans would be at the other end of the basketball court. We thought we were Michael Jordan. We'd just be empty beer bottles. Or we might try and take people's trash out for them. Didn't matter that they didn't need their trash taken out for them, mind you, Fraser. But we would take the trash out for them and leave it in the middle of the street.
Right, okay.
I did, and I hate this. I hate this. I hate this. I hate this. So men, women, I suppose that it affects y'all too. But men, if you're struggling with pornography, you don't have to keep doing it. I heard an old joke. 95% of men will admit to struggling with pornography and the other 5% are lying. That stuff sits in your brain and it stays there. I love my wife. My wife knows about the fact that I used to look at that stuff, but I haven't looked at anything and honestly don't remember when. But for those 3 years, I was a mess. You know, you get saved, you become a Christian, and the people that you're following, and that's part of why the book comes in eventually, is you look at one thing and you think that's what you're supposed to be looking at. And then you get a reality check, and you're like, holy crap, that ain't it. And it got so bad, Fraser, that darkness that you're talking about. We had moved to Tennessee after, and there aren't a whole lot of people on Facebook or otherwise. I don't think that my daughter's heard this story yet. My stepdaughter, daughter, bonus daughter, however you want to refer to her. It's my wife's daughter. My wife had a couple of children with in her previous marriage.
Oh, yeah.
But it got so bad. We went to Tennessee for a while after I graduated. My mom, my sister, and an uncle we had.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bad decision. And mom wasn't feeling well, and we decided, you know what, Tennessee wasn't the right move. And so we moved back to Colorado. And we had arranged a place for me to stay for a little bit and for my sister to stay for a little bit. Now, my brother was married, and he was pretty much still a newlywed. Right? He was only... See, 85, he would have been trying to do math. I used to be able to do math, Fraser. I can't do math anymore. He was 27.
Oh, yeah.
So he was a newlywed. He was only been married for two or three years. I think my niece was still a baby. But we asked him to take my mom in for a month just until we could find your place. That's all we wanted. 1 month. You know, just so we can sit back, find a place, and then that's all we need. And I heard him tell my uncle he didn't want the responsibility of my mom. And that's how it came across, is he didn't want the responsibility. And Fraser? No, this is 1985. So he would have been 27. I'm 19. I'm still pissed off. Sorry, I apologize to your listeners for my French.
I was in 1985. I was only 10.
Yeah, I know. But I was mad at the world. I was mad at the Lord and trying to figure out, you know, what was happening. And so I developed a pretty strong hatred for my brother. And he and I have since made up for it. But Fraser, it reached a point at one time when my brother came over one day and he wanted to take mom for lunch or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't having it. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. He and I got into a brief fight, and then something snapped. I'd been developing a reputation and a nickname as Wolverine, and yeah, that Wolverine from the comics.
Okay.
All the surgeries I'd had, Fraser, I'm 50, almost 58 years old now. I've still never had a broken bone. 30 plus surgeries, my hips, not mine. I've still never had a broken bone. I always healed faster. I always picked on, or not picked on, but I never ran from a fight. I just wasn't that smart. So Wolverine fit. And plus, didn't think I had any emotions, and Wolverine was always non-emotional, but something snapped that day with my brother. And I took him over I don't know if they have them over in Scotland. I'd love to visit and find out. But over here in America, they have these white picket fences around our yards.
Yeah, some places like,
And I took him over a white picket fence, made sure I landed on top of him. Now I'm 110 pounds still. I don't weigh crap. And in his defense, he doesn't weigh much more than I do. Maybe 120, 130. Military person, but he's a gentle soul, and I am not a gentle soul at this point, and I am literally ready to kill him, and I am in a position to do so. And all of a sudden I hear a voice say, he's not worth it. And I've got a fist back like this, and I'm fixing to hit him, and I hear the voice. I shouldn't say I don't hear it like I hear you,
mm-hmm.
but I just hear this, he's not worth it. And I'm like, so I pick him up from out from under me and I push him up against his car. I said, get out of here. A year or so later, I'm not sure about the timeline. I know our friend Mark talks about CTE and 30 concussions. I've had somewhere between 7 and 11 that we know about. I don't remember them all. I wasn't a professional wrestler. Obviously, at 120 pounds, that's not going to work.
You'd probably be quite a flat pancake if you did.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm not sure you'd last very long.
But I've fallen on a couple of surfaces, chipped a couple of pieces of concrete along the way with this hard head, but sometime I want to say about a year after that, I was down in San Antonio with some friends. Mom had moved down there. And December 31st, I'd had all four of my wisdom teeth pulled.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about, I was not a wise drinker. And the person I was staying with, he and his girlfriend and my mom, we put on a bus back to Colorado Springs from San Antonio. And he stopped at a liquor store. I'm 19. No, I'm 20. I hadn't turned 21 yet. I can't drink. I'm not supposed to drink anything anyway. And he said, do you want anything? I said, buy me a 4-pack wine coolers, please. And he did. And I knew that if I drank one wine cooler really fast, I'd get a decent buzz. And being the smart person that I am, ha ha ha, I didn't drink one wine cooler or two wine coolers. I drank all four of them. And since I'd had all four of my wisdom teeth pulled, they gave me my friend Percocet. I didn't overdose, technically, but I did pop a Percocet and four wine coolers in about 5 minutes. And I went to sleep. Razor at 110 pounds, four wine coolers, and a Percocet. I'm still amazed that I woke up in 7 hours or so.
How much wine's in a wine cooler?
How much what?
How much wine's in a wine cooler?
It's legal. It's more than I should have had as a 20-year-old.
So
it's probably a couple of beers. If I remember right, I think the equivalent of a wine cooler at that point, if I remember right, and I haven't had but one sip of wine in 36 years, but I want to say a wine cooler was like the equivalent of two beers.
Small.
I could be wrong. So we're talking about maybe eight beers in 5 minutes.
So it's equivalent to two beers. Is it a can of beer or a bottle of beer?
I would say a can, but I do not know.
So it's not a lot. They're quite small then.
Yeah.
Okay. So a small bottle of wine. Yeah, I don't drink alcohol, so I'm teetotal.
Good man. Don't start.
So they're small. They sound, the way you're talking, they sound like they're bigger.
Apologize, but no, I knew it was enough.
It sounds like it's bigger than it is, but so a couple of cans, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's the wine cooler itself is like your traditional bottle of Coca-Cola.
Right, okay, got you. It's a small bottle, like a half bottle of wine, really.
You get
your full bottle of wine, you get your half bottle, so it's like a half bottle of wine. Okay.
Right.
Just the equivalent. Right, got you.
Right, but with my weight, and on top of the Percocet, the Percocet on the bottle, says don't mix with alcohol, and I'm like,
so
I'm not too concerned
because so basically you got quite well. I say typically say more than tipsy. You got probably got drunk very easily.
Yeah, I expected to be drunk. I expected to wake up, and vomit New Year's Day away. And I woke up, Fraser. Though that's where it's more real and more interesting for me is I woke up and I went, wait a minute. Started counting. I went 1, 2, 3, looked under the bed. Oh, there it is. 4. I went, why does my mouth hurt? And I found the bottle. Went, oh, that's why my mouth hurts. I had surgery yesterday. And I went, wait, what did I do? And I processed it. And like I said, maybe it wasn't that much wine for a normal person or for any person. But for me being 110 pounds, and somebody can disprove me and that's fine. I just know that it felt like, because for me to put tips on one bottle of wine, and that's what I used to do. That's why I learned I loved wine coolers back in the day. But anyway, I woke up and figuring all this stuff out, and all of a sudden I hear that voice that said that my brother wasn't worth it. I hear him say, hey, let's talk about your life. I went, okay. He said, why don't you tell me what you've done with your life? And so me, I took it as a challenge. I said, well, I did this with my life. I pointed to the fact that one of the things I may have pointed out was, in the fifth grade, while Dad was dying of cancer, I won the elementary school spelling bee, and there were sixth graders that I beat. And he said, did you really do that? I went, well, no, probably not. He said, okay, let's try it then. And I said, what else have you done with your life? And I went, well, I said, I was voted most Christ-like student in the Christian school as an eighth grader. And there are all those kids that were older than I was. He said, did you really do that, considering where you are now? I went, well, no, probably didn't do that either. And he said, what else? Threw it one more shot. And I said, well, when I left the Christian school, they said that they thought I was the best Christian, the best student they'd ever had. I was even the vice principal.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, did you really do that? And I went, and I'm just, like I said, Fraser, it's 36 years and too many concussions. So I'm just thinking about what might have gone through my addled brain at 20 years of age. And he said, did you really do that? And I went, well, no, I didn't. And by this time, I was in college in San Antonio, and I was struggling in college, which was a first for me.
Right.
And when he asked me the third time, it was almost, and I want to be careful, I am not Peter. I am not the Apostle Peter. But it reminded me of, you know, Jesus asking Peter, do you love me? It was that same type of thing. And the third time when I said, no, I said, I didn't do any of it. And then the Lord said, because I knew it was the Lord. The Lord said, what are you doing? Are you doing anything without me? Have you ever done anything without me? And I said, no. He said, I am waiting for you. Do you want to come back to me? And I said, I think I better. I said, if I don't, I don't think I'm going to survive. And he said, come back. And that was January 1st, 1987 in San Antonio, Texas, in a little suburb called Windsor Park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that brings me back to the Lord, but it doesn't bring me back to church. And that scared the snot out of me. But what it did do is, I didn't have a car back then. And I was living with a person who wasn't where he needed to be with the Lord. So I started reading the Bible and praying like I had never done at any point in the Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
It was required then. Here I did it because I needed it for survival.
Right.
An hour trip each way, multiple times a week to the college, University of Texas, San Antonio. And instead of reading my school books, again, because I'm smart, I was reading the Bible. And it really was the smartest thing I could have done. But I was in survival mode.
Right.
And I did it for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And I reached out to a friend of mine in Colorado Springs, and I said, hey, I said, this is what's been happening. This is where I am. He said, well, that's good. You've been needing that for a few years. I'm like, yeah, tell me something I don't know. I said, but I do need you to tell me something I don't know. He says, you know what it is. I said, no. I said, no, 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 no. So the last time I was in a church, bad things happened. I said, I'm not going to a church. So I refuse. He said, if you don't go to a church, you're going to be right back where you were. I said, you don't understand. Church put me where I am now. And what it was, and again, just thinking about the book, Fraser, it wasn't the church that put me where I was. It was me looking at the people, not looking at Jesus. And so, ironically enough, at the end of the little street that I was on in San Antonio, or Windsor Park, that suburb in San Antonio, there's a small country church. Population-wise in that church was probably smaller than the Christian school, than the church I'd gone to at the Christian school. And I said, I'll tell you what, I will go knock on the door at the church and see when their services are. They were so small, Fraser, they didn't even have something out in front of there that said what their hours were, brother. So I had to knock on the door, hope somebody was on the inside that let yours truly in to tell them, hey, services are at 9 or 11 or whatever time. I thought, okay, here's my out. It's my out to you too, Lord. If there's nobody there, I'm going to consider that a sign that you don't want me to go back to church because you know how bad it will be for everybody involved. So I walked down there one day and I knocked on the door. Knock, knock, knock. And I hear this vacuum and I'm like, uh-oh. Could be good news, could be bad news. Good news is vacuuming's on. They're not hearing me because of the vacuuming. But bad news is somebody's in there, so they might hear me. So I knocked on the door, Fraser. And because the person that I talked to in Colorado Springs was one of my best friends and like a mentor to me, I stuck around for a minute and I knocked within. And I think I had started to walk away. And I hear the door open. I'm like, uh-oh. And I turned around and there's this kindly old man opens the door and he says, can I help you? And he didn't know who I was from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
I could have been Charles Manson's little brother. And up to about 2 months ago, that's what I felt like. And I said, I just lived down the street. I was just wondering what time your church services were on Sunday. And he told me what time they were, 10, 10:30, 11 or whatever. I said, okay, thank you. I appreciate it. And I went on my merry way. And then that Sunday, I didn't have church clothes at that point. I just had probably blue jeans and a t-shirt, I think. I don't think I had any dress clothes. I might have because I had to apply for work. But sorry. Sorry for that little rabbit trail. But anyway, Sunday I went back to church and I go in and I'm petrified. Right. See, because I'll tell you this, I'm going to flip back to that cliff lipping palate, Fraser. Right. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I told Richard this. I might have told Richard Kaufman. We talked about him for a moment. I don't think I told Cynthia Concordia this either. But one of the things about me and this cleft lip and palate, 57 years later, brother, is I am petrified of microphones. I am petrified of doing what you and I are doing right now.
Okay.
Because I hear every imperfection, whether anybody else does or not. But anyway.
Imperfection of how you pronounce your words.
Imperfection of how people think I pronounce my words, but yes.
You actually come across absolutely, there's not an issue, to be honest with you.
Well, I appreciate that. But so anyway, I have, it's just part of why I'm so terrified of strangers and trying to meet new people. But anyway, I go back to this church on that Sunday and like I said, they don't know me from Adam. I don't know them. I just know my last experience in a church is horrible.
Right.
But I look up there, Fraser, after the scene's over, and I'm looking, I'm like, wait. And it's not that far, but I'm just, my eyes are like, that doesn't look right. Because the dude delivering the sermon is the dude that was vacuuming the floors.
There you go.
And Fraser, I won't take a lot of time, but I will say this sincerely, and they have heard me say it to them. And as often as I can, that little church in Windsor Park, Jesus saved my soul, but that church in Windsor Park saved my life. If they would not have been believers in deed and not just in word, you're not talking to me because I'm not going to survive San Antonio. It's really that simple. They took out of what little they had and helped me for a couple of nights when I was literally trying to escape from San Antonio about a month later. I ended up back in Colorado Springs. And the rest is becoming history.
So when all this was happening regarding sort of the San Antonio, what age were you roughly?
2021. Yeah.
So you got yourself back to Colorado Springs, right?
Yes, sir.
So what was the kind of next chapter then?
I spent 5 years doing, of all things, sheet metal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I did break my left arm. I'm almost certain of it. I didn't have medical insurance, but for a while, my left arm was the same size from my shoulder to my wrist.
Right.
If you look at your normal arm, there's a narrowing on the forearm. My left arm didn't narrow for about 3 months.
Right.
Okay. I think that was a stress fracture. But I did sheet metal for 5 months. I had an amazing opportunity to work for a Christian organization that I can't mention, so nobody ever gets the wrong idea about me using their name, but it was a phenomenal job. But I'm still struggling.
What's the reason you can't mention it?
Just so nobody ever says that I'm trading on their name.
Okay. Is that really that bad?
No, it's not that bad. It's just that I want to honor them.
Okay.
Whenever I worked for them, they had a policy where you had to clear using their name with them before you use their name.
Okay. That's a very interesting policy. That's strange. Yeah. You'd think you'd want, because that's not on your part, but on their part, you think you'd want to, So you.
Well, what happens is if I screw up, if I say the wrong thing, then somebody twists it and says that ministry supports what Mike did. Or Mike does, and so it gives him a black eye.
I sort of see your point, but okay.
They're not the only ones I've worked with that did that.
Right, that's actually okay. I would say that I can understand that yes, in some way, but
yeah. So
it sounds like a very oversensitive a lot of it.
They have to be.
Yeah,
anyway, Christian organizations these days have to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. Yeah, I get the gist. I think, yeah, sometimes there's, yeah, okay, yeah. Anyway, carry on. Sorry, I'm just.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. I understand. It can be strange.
Yeah. So sheet metal kind of organizations you work for. Obviously, you can't say their names because.
I did that for 12 years, finished college late in life, went to college at 37, picked up a Bachelor of Arts in Biology, did quite a bit of medical stuff, low-level medical stuff, met my wife at 44.
Okay.
So
what other, out with college, and you obviously, what you've been through, what we've just discussed so far. Did you struggle with, obviously, during a period of 21, roughly, till hit you 37? What period of that, because you have said you felt down, so you've been struggling with probably what's more common in mental health called depression these days, and it's more realized now than it was probably back then. But you would have struggled with that for a period, yeah?
I honestly did. You know, it was funny. Well, not funny, haha, but funny looking back on it. It took me a while to see the correlation.
Mm-hmm.
5 months after I came out of San Antonio, marked 10 years since Dad died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And at that point, I'm going to estimate that I'm going to use 11 just for numbers sake, Fraser. But out of the 11 concussions I've had, I'm going to say at that point at 21, I'd had maybe 7 or 8 of them. Mm-hmm. But at 21, marked 10 years of not having Dad. Right. In the summer of my 21st year, I wasn't treated. I didn't have medical insurance, but I believe I had a nervous breakdown.
Okay.
Because what happened is just 6 months after coming back to the Lord, my brain went, "Hey, Mike, where are all the memories of your dad?"
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was 11 years old when Dad died, Fraser. Mm-hmm. But I could go back to when I was 4, and I could see these memories of different off-the-wall stuff. And I could see off-the-wall stuff at 5 and 6 and on till 11. Now, with the surgeries, Mom was with me a lot because Dad was in the military. Yeah. And when we traveled to Atlanta, you know, Dad's stuck in Benning, and he can't travel for the military, and somebody's got to watch my little sister, and all this. But my brain's going, you should have memories of your dad. And there were a couple of memories. My dad loved me. My dad was not an abusive person that punched people like, you know, we hear about. But I do remember annoying him once and him letting that get the best of him. But there's all this other time, Fraser, when I don't have memories of my dad. And at 21, just 6 months after coming back to the Lord and still reading and praying like I have never done before, and I'm going like, Lord, how about you fill in some of these holes for me? And God going, no, it's not the right time. And so for 2 or 3 months that summer of 1987, the Lord and I went, well, he didn't go anywhere, but I was just going, Lord, hello, just explain it to me. If you don't want to give me the memories, just explain it to me. Just explain it to me. And I talked to my little sister and I talked to my brother and said, hey, what am I missing? Tell me the memories you have. I talked to longtime family and friends, Fraser, and it was like radio silence. And I broke. I was in tears. That person that spent all those years not having emotions except for the bad ones, I spent a lot of time honestly in tears. So yeah, your assessment, my friend, is right. I was clinically depressed.
So when did it last for a long time? Did you start to come out of it, or when did you feel you were getting better?
I had to reach a point where I had to say, okay, Lord, I did it. I don't have to find out down here. I had to be okay with it. And so there are still moments when I'm like, wow, it would be nice to know that, or gee, I wonder what happened. But I have to trust that the Lord, you know, the same Lord that, and I'm gonna catch back up here to 44, because I, as a Christian, I believe that God has a plan. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the plan is for anybody listening to this, but I know God has a plan for you, and I believe that with all my heart. But right before I turned 44, right before I met my wife, I was out having dinner with a friend. It was a platonic dinner with an old, ironically enough, an old Christian school classmate. And she told me, she said, Mike, she said, when you meet your wife, and I think it's, I want to say it's Colossians 3:20 maybe, Colossians 1:20. She said, when you meet your wife, Mike, she said, she is going to be above and beyond all you can ask or imagine. And Fraser, I met my wife in March of 2010. I proposed to her in April of 2010. We got married in July of 2010. And she was everything that my other friend had told me Darlene would be. She's more than I could ask or imagine. And so I have to trust that the same God that will do that for me for a wife has the best interest in me for my memories, whether I understand it. As smart as I've ever been, as smart as I'll ever be, is irrelevant.
So let's go soon. At what point, you're married at 44, you say you're now 58.
Yes, sir.
So, married life, you've been provided for. Did you have kids with your wife, or is it just...
No, we were married late, and so we don't kids. Have it. She did, she had two.
Basically, your stepdad, two. Okay, so going forward... at what point when did you start to think about the book?
This book? I wrote a book in 2004 for cancer patients.
Okay. You've done a book already.
I'm sorry?
You've done a book already. This is your second book. So you've done a book already.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Let's talk about the first book.
So the first book came out of wanting to help people with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it with a Christian publisher. And they, how can I put this delicately? I don't really think there is a delicate way to put it. They embezzled millions of dollars from their writers.
Right.
And so they're no longer walking among the public, I don't think, anymore.
In jail, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my first book went up in flames. But about, I suppose it's been close to a year and a half, I ran into this online magazine called Faith on Every Corner.
Mm-hmm.
And they were gracious enough to start letting me do articles for them. I've done, between poems and articles, Fraser, I've done probably closing in now on 300 different writings.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks over at Faith on Every Corner, they've done stuff with Amazon as far as publishers, publishing for people like me. And we tried to rebirth the initial book, and we were this close. We were this close. And Amazon said, nope. And I was devastated. It's like having a dream that's almost there, and then it's just like crushed. And I went through a month or two, and I told my wife, and I told the guys at Faith on Every Corner, I said, I'm done. I honestly didn't think I'd write anything at all, ever. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, Lord, I appreciate what you've done, and hopefully it's blessed some people along the way, but I said, I am done. I said, I'm too old. I've got to work. I said, I don't have time and energy for it. And then my wife, because she is the world's best encourager, she said, Mike, she said, you need to do it. And Craig and Karen Rule at Faith on Every Corner said, Mike, let us help you. And my daughter Jennifer and even my grandson Xander, they all threw in photos. And my long-term collaborator, Beck Lawson, sorry, Beck, don't shoot me for mentioning your name on a podcast, sorry. They all threw in photos, and we wrote a book. Because everybody feels down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before even today, Fraser, you and I talked about how this world is coming to an end, whether it's now or whether it's 1,000 years from now. But we need to be reminded of the fact that Jesus is coming back. And that's a large portion of this book. That's about maybe a quarter of the book, because look up. Your redemption's drawing nigh. You know, yeah. Your viewers might not be able to see it because of the camera, and that's fine, but I'm wearing a shirt here today that says, I stand with Israel. This war over Israel, to me, just kind of pushed that plot further toward his return. And so the book came about because, you know, I've dealt with depression. I've known people that dealt with depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known people that have unfortunately followed people instead of following Jesus. You know, Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. And that would be my encouragement to our listeners. I say are only in the sense that I'm on your phenomenal podcast here today, sir. But don't get caught up in following men. Follow Jesus. I saw, is it, I want to make sure I'm saying this right, Apple Mint Ministries that you're involved with?
Yeah, a thing that I just created. Yeah, something there.
So here's the thing. I want to encourage you. I want to take the time, because you're blessing me. I want to bless you, my friend. I had a friend at that other Christian ministry that I can't name, but when I wrote the first book, she quoted a verse. I want to say it's in Zechariah. I should have looked it up before I came on, so I apologize.
That's right.
But it's a verse that talks about don't despise small beginnings, depending on which version you read. King James, okay. NIV, whatever. But sometimes things start small. Because imagine this, Fraser. Why am I here with you? Well, the reason I'm here with you is because I wrote this. But then I saw Mark Smith do a video with Richard Kaufman, which then made me and Mark really tight. Love you, kid. You need to call me sometime. Which then led me to yours and his video, which is amazing. Watch the video, people. And Mark and I, and I hope I can say this without violating his confidence, but he and I were talking the other day as I was walking through Walmart, to be perfectly honest with you. And I said, Mark, I said, I'm going to be honest with you, brother. I said, and I won't get into details, but I said, Mark, I said, if all this book does for me, hopefully it'll minister to people. I said, but Mark, I've met you. I've met a young lady named Terry Wiseman, Fraser, that I might talk to either after this is over in a messenger that you need to hook up, or not, that would come across wrong, but that I need to connect you with. Well, she's married, brother, and I'm not going to hook you up with a married woman. I'm sorry. I love you, man. I love Terry. I'm not hooking you two up, but I need to connect two of y'all with. But I said, if all that comes of this book is that it ministers to a couple of people and I meet wonderful people like you and Fraser, I said, then the book's a success to me. So that's where the book's come from. That's where it is now. So that's it. That's the book.
So what I've just picked up on, right, just like as I'm hearing you talk, and you said, you said that you still struggle by the way you sound. You said because of your cleft lip, the way you come across, you sound like you're obviously, you're saying to yourself, I sound, when you're talking, you sound different. To me, you come across is not an issue. And that to me, saying, and I'm just listening to you talk. I'm listening to you when you're describing your book. I think, now, to give you an insight, I have struggled with depression in the past. I lost my dad when I was 5 years old. I have had cancer. I've had mild kidney cancer. I know what it's like. It's brutal. And to go through, and that was cancer from, I had mild kidney cancer last year. You take a cryotherapy, a lump taken off my kidney. So I'm being monitored for the next 5 years. So I've got an appointment in March to follow up, just monitorization. So, but yeah, so I know to go through a lot of the stuff that you've been through. Yes, I do understand, but I also get a picture that you still struggle with that. There's a slight inkling. It's almost like there's a slight inkling. I feel that you're lacking confidence, and your confidence is still not quite there. And I think it's something it obviously worries you the way you might sound, but you come across absolutely fine, and there's not a problem. And it's like you need to. I think you're just struggling with that confidence. You need to get over that. That you come across, and the way to do that is actually just listen to yourself back on podcasts. Listen to yourself, because you come across absolutely no problem. There's not an issue with the way you talk, absolutely very well. For somebody who has gone through what you've gone through, there's not an issue. And I think you're just lacking a bit of confidence. So you need to believe in yourself more, that there's absolutely not an issue going on. And you just need to sort of say, right, no, there's not an issue. And I can do this, and I can do this even better. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep going forward and keep striving. And this is probably, I think you're still struggling a little bit. And this is my personal observation. But to give you a plight, and just to say that, don't be, because you sound absolutely amazing. You come across very well. And there's no issue in your words and how you speak. So, yeah, you can do it, you know?
Okay. Well, I appreciate that very much. I really do.
Yeah, you come across not an issue. You would never think you sound anything. I know that's twinging a nerve for you. I can tell because I can see you're getting a little bit emotional. But you don't never had somebody say that to you. I don't think you don't really get that often. But you're fine.
My wife tells me about it all the time. But you know, she's my wife.
Yeah, but somebody else you've never. I mean, you've only known me for a short space of time, but you do come across no problem. And I think you need to get yourself stop, get yourself out of that frame of mind and thinking, oh yeah, I don't sound that good, or I don't, yeah. Get yourself out of it and know that you sound absolutely fine and start going forward. You've written a book for a reason, right? You've written a book to help, to somehow help people. So build on the confidence of yourself that you sound fine and sell it. Talk about the book with confidence. Tell people about it. But go on and say, right, I've written a book. What's next? Where do I want to, you're 58. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? What's your goals going forward? Let me ask you that question. What are your goals? Excuse me. What are your goals going forward? What's your plans for the book? What's your sort of ideas that you've got, or what do you want to do? See yourself doing?
Well, it's ironic that you mentioned moving forward with the podcast. I actually have two more lined up. I'll tease Ira here, Mark here, the international author, international speaker. I've done you now, so now I can say I'm an international speaker. But I'm doing one on Tuesday with a lady from Australia, and then I've got another one set for I want to say a couple of weeks with Texas, and they're a whole other country, they tell us. So I'll be all over the place. But no, in all seriousness, Karen want me to do another book. So I may do another book if I can talk my team into collaborating with me on another book.
Okay.
Well, Mark and I have talked about a couple of things. I'm sorry?
I forgot to ask you, what job do you do now? What kind of job? Because what do you do as a job now?
I do insurance.
Insurance. So what kind of, as in life insurance?
I'm an adjuster. I'm a claims adjuster.
Claims of some... Okay, so
if there's an accident that happens, I have to try and make sure that everybody gets paid appropriately.
Right, okay. I was going to use a... my head's just thought, because I know Mark Smith, who will laugh at this. So if Mark basically bangs into my car and I make a claim, you've got to make sure all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and the figures are correct.
100%.
Right, okay, so that's fine. I think of Mark, because after the interview we just have such a laugh, and he's got that kind of, yeah, it's just okay. But yeah, so I get your point. That's good. So you do that. That's good. So looking at where you are now, this is what I always ask. So you want to do another book. You're working in insurance. What other stuff do you do or like? Now I know, like for example, cinema, going to the movies, watching TV programs, or going out for a walk. Any sports do you watch? What other stuff do you kind of like doing?
Well, my 49ers are in the Super Bowl, so I'm hoping that they win.
American football fan. That's good.
Football fan, yeah. They have a phenomenal young quarterback named Brock Purdy, who is a pretty devout Christian. So I've been a 49er fan from way back when, even before they were Super Bowl champions with Montana. So I know that's before your time, but some of the people that are listening to this will understand what I'm talking about. We have our son is in Michigan, our daughter's in Washington with our grandchildren, so we like to try and visit them as much as possible. So yeah, it's just a matter of finding time to visit family and friends whenever we can. Like I said, Karen want me to do another book, so if I can find a subject matter for it, and I can bring the band back together. If not in 2024, maybe in 2025, we'll do another book.
Okay. So on what I've just said to you, to say to try and that you have a lot of confidence, you have a lot going for you, you just got to believe in yourself more. And that's what I'm going to say, that you believe in yourself more, that you can do it. You can reach for the top. And what maybe on a suggestion, even though you're being interviewed a lot on podcasts, try and think about, could I start my own podcast? Could Mike Buchanan interview people and actually create something himself, another brand, another sort of branch to the tree or something, which would help your book or help, again, have you maybe reached out to authors, Christian authors or other author groups or people who do more, who maybe search for people, even though you've got sort of for collaboration, but finding new people to assist you in the collaboration of something you might come up with.
Richard Hoffman and I have talked about it very, very low key. It's just a matter of trying to find time.
Oh, okay. That's good. So hopefully gradually as this year goes on. But I suppose in a sense, you've only recently published this book recently?
Middle of last year.
So not fairly. So it's half six months. So
yeah.
There's the man himself that we've been talking about. He's watching on Facebook, Mr. Ina Mark Smith.
Why are what?
I am the one who called. We were talking. He's talking. Mark Smith, who I interviewed on my previous podcast, or the one that went out last year. He's talking about the insurance claim, and he was asking why he's the one that caused the wreck. So he said, it could be me if you want to reverse it. I'll say I caused it, and you can be. There we go. You're going to get a trusty chat and always a good laugh. Mark Smith, absolute genius. But anyway, so we're going to wrap it up because we have been talking for over an hour. Let's wrap up with a final word from yourself. How would you want to encourage, or what do you want to say to people out there who have listened to this, even though we've talked about car insurance smashes and everything?
Well,
apart from that, but what would you want to say to people that might want to encourage somebody or help somebody? And where can people connect with you if they want to interview you or talk to you about your book or even buy your book?
Well, the book's available on Amazon.com. It's a feeling down ! ! As far as connecting with me, I am on Facebook. My daughter set me up with a Facebook.com just for the book. So it's Facebook.com/feelingdownlookup. So that might be the easiest way. There are, strangely enough, more Mike Buchanans on Facebook than you would think. So if you look for Facebook.com/feelingdownlookup, that's the easiest way to find me. The only thing that I would add, Fraser, and I know you're a man of faith, so I'm just going to go ahead and end this way that I try and end everything, sir. We don't know when Jesus is coming back. And even if we did, here's what we don't know. And unfortunately, it's true. We don't know how much time we have left on this earth as people. The Bible tells us that it is appointed unto man once to die, and after that to face the judgment. So Fraser is like a brother to me already, and I appreciate the time. But if for whatever reason you stumbled into this, you're a fan of Fraser's, you're a friend of mine, somebody told you to go check out the two crazy Scottish people and have a laugh or two. In all seriousness, Jesus is coming back. He came once because he loved you and he died for your sins. If nobody's ever told you that, if you don't take anything else, my cleft lips, Fraser's amazing sense of humor and his great abilities as a host, if all you take away from this is Jesus died for you, that's the message that you should take away from this. Jesus died for you because he loved you. All you have to do is do what I did back in 1987 and say, yes, I want you. Yes, I'm willing to live for you. Please forgive my sins and be my Lord and Savior. And that would be my final word, Fraser.
Okay. Well, to everyone who has been watching or listening or maybe see the replay, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, or YouTube, I'm listening to you on the audio on the podcast. We'll edit. We'll have this out in a few in time. We have a few in the bag to put out, you can have a chance to watch or watch this. Also, listen on the podcast. We are on Spotify and other Google. Had to resubmit our stuff to iTunes podcast, which is a bit of annoying, but never mind. But soon we'll hopefully be back on officially. So as I say, you'll be able, if you want to connect with Mike, or the links will be in the show notes. He'll send me them for the audio version, and you can listen to this or watch it if you've got time. And thanks for coming on, and thanks for being a guest. And I'm glad you connected with me via Mark, and hopefully as no, just he's commenting. I'm trying not to laugh. He's in a going for a parking
lot. What?
He's
I can't see the comments.
I'm trying. Well, it says that I now feel guilty about a parking ticket or hitting a car. So I was gonna, as I'm just thinking the words of it, I could just imagine Mark saying, "What you gonna do, brother, when Mark Smith runs wild over you?" Anyway,
Markmania.
Mark Smith-a-mania. Anyway, on that note, listen to everybody who is maybe sees this around the world, wherever you are. Thanks for watching another edition to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast, and to Mike as my guest. And until next time, have a great day, evening, week going forward, wherever you're up to. Until next time, speak to you all soon, and bye for now.